What is up, freaks? This is Jigsaw from... Oh, what the fuck was that? Saw. You want to play a game? That's all I got.
It's actually Marty Ben. To introduce this rip of TFTC, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Unchained Capital. Unchained Capital is here to bring you financial services, to bring you security, to bring you education, to bring you white glove concierge service that'll take you from zero to having a 2S3 multi-sig vault set up where you hold two keys and Unchained holds one key. This is important. You eliminate single points of failure. If you have all your Bitcoin on an exchange, that is a single point of failure. Bitcoin exchanges are known to get hacked. They're known to be targets of regulatory scrutiny. One day you could wake up. You can either not have your Bitcoin because the exchange lost it or not have access to it because somebody went to the exchange and said, don't give the freak access to his Bitcoin just because we said so. Unchained helps you eliminate that single party risk, okay, by creating a 2S3 signature vault, a multi-sig vault, where you hold two keys again. So you have full control of your Bitcoin as long as you have those two keys. Not even Unchained can prevent you from moving those Bitcoin. You can move them whenever you want. But Unchained does have a key in case you get in a pinch and you need them to move your Bitcoin. On top of this, they're providing financial services. They have a lending desk. They have an IRA product. They're building out a banger team. Go check out everything they have going on at unchained.com. Unchained.com. Use the code TFTC. If you want to do the white glove concierge service, you'll get $50 off that package. Comes with video conference calls, hardware wallets, and 1,000 cuck bucks worth of sats dumped in your vault once it's all set up. This rip was also brought to you by good friends at Brains. 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 The team with the brains to bring you the Brains OS Plus firmware that's going to help you stack more sats with your ASICs. If you're in the mining world and you have an ASIC, one of those computers that produces hashes that allow you to connect to a mining pool that then pays you in sats for contributing to producing hashes that allow you to add blocks of transactions to the Bitcoin network. Brains OS Plus firmware, if you download it on an ASIC, if that ASIC is compatible, it's going to help you stack more sats because you're going to be producing more hashes, which is going to get you more sats at the end of the day from the mining pool or your own pool, your own self-mining operation if you have one. Brains OS Plus firmware is the firmware that Brains is working on. They're also the team behind Slush Pool, which is the oldest mining pool in Bitcoin's existence, the first ever mining pool. It's survived. A lot have come and gone, but Slush Pool has remained steadfast, a stalwart in the mining pool industry. If you're using Brains OS Plus firmware on your ASIC and you point your hash at Slush Pool, you're going to get 0% fees from Slush Pool. So that's a good perk. You don't have to point your Brains OS Plus firmware enabled ASIC at Slush Pool. However, if you do, you get those fees waived, the pool fees. They've got insights.brains.com, an incredible website that'll allow you to get a whole perspective of the mining industry, profitability, hash rate, difficulty, pool distribution, profitability of individual ASIC models, the whole shabam. Insights.brains.com. Go to brains, BRAIINS.com. Check out everything they have going on. It's all consolidated in that one website. You go to brains.com. You'll see Slush Pool, firmware, the dashboard, the good content. Brains.com. BRAIINS.com. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you by good friends at HODL HODL. HODL HODL is here to bring you a no KYC, no AML lending platform that leverages Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. You put Bitcoin up as collateral in a 2S3 multi-sig escrow account. You hold one key, your counterparty in the loan holds one key, and then HODL HODL is the third key, the arbiter in the situation. The beauty of this, you don't have control of the Bitcoin throughout the duration of the loan. However, since you hold a key in the 2S3 multi-sig wallet, you have visibility into the wallet, which gives you the ability to have confidence that your Bitcoin is not being rehypothecated after you put it up as collateral to get stablecoin liquidity. You put your Bitcoin up, in the 203 multisig, you get stablecoins in return as long as you're paying back that loan plus the interest attached to it. You were going to get your sats back at the end of the day. The other side of that marketplace is the people giving out the stable coins. If you have stable coins and you want to enter a peer-to-peer anonymous lending market, you can do that at HODL HODL. Lend.hodlhodl.com is the lending platform. HODL HODL also has a peer-to-peer exchange. Just go to hodlhodl.com for that. They're building incredible tools and products at HODL HODL. Bang up team. Really staying true to Bitcoin's ethos of peer-to-peer commerce and leveraging Bitcoin's native properties to bring a future financial product. Well, it exists today. It's not a future financial product. It's here today, but they're creating a vision of what a future financial company may look like. Lend.hodlhodl.com for the lending platform. Enjoy this riff.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
We got to burn down the healthcare industry.
Burn it down. Hopefully the ATF doesn't call me. When I say that, I got to burn down the healthcare industry and like the knock on your door, right?
Well, the ATF's known for burning things down.
Well,
so maybe
true.
We should.
That's true.
Maybe we should tap them.
Not
on the
too
shoulder.
Far from here, too, right? Like,
maybe they'll help us. Yeah,
exactly. Maybe you can help.
Sitting down with Andy Schoonover from Crowd Health. Thank you for coming on, sir. Hey,
man, thanks for having me. This is fun. Appreciate it.
Well, like I was saying right before we record, I think what you're doing is very important. You're here to burn down the healthcare industry. And build it back up. So before we get into crowd health and all that, why do you think it needs to be burnt down?
There's just so many legacy incentives that it's just gonna be hard to whittle away.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be burned down or broken and started again because there are too many people with too much money involved to see it make significant progress by just a slow whittle. You know, it really needs to be burnt down and start again. I think it has to start with the payment processes, given there are so many perverse incentives within payment. We can get into that, but it's, you know, people are like, why is healthcare so broken? You know, and I was like, well, when you have a system where the buyers of healthcare, which is health plans, and the sellers of healthcare, which are hospital systems, and they both want the price to go up, guess what? The price is going up, right? It doesn't take an economist to figure that out. So we've got an incentive system where health plans actually want prices to go up. It's really screwed up. And they're the ones supposed to be negotiating for us, mm-hmm. right? But they're not. I mean, they've got an incentive to actually see your premiums go up from month to month. And so it's just unsustainable.
So you have hospitals, the plan providers. So let's describe all the stakeholders in this incentive system. So those are mm-hmm. two. Who else is layered in there?
Well, you got brokers, mm-hmm. right? So brokers are in the game because it's so complex that nobody feels like they can tackle health insurance on their own. And so the brokers take a big chunk out of your monthly premium as well. You know, it's somewhere between 10 and 15% goes to brokers, which is incredible to me. And so, you know, they're in the middle of that. So if you could redo the system so it's less complex, you and I would feel very comfortable with going on, you know, the internet and order health insurance just like we would kayak on, you know, airplanes or cars or, you know, things like that, or all the other things that we go on the online to buy. It shouldn't be complex. And so, you know, Crowd Health, we're really trying to simplify everything. Simplicity is a core value of ours. We just want to make it easy to understand, given healthcare is just so damn complex.
Well, it's not really complex. It's stressful, right? Thinking about it. I was telling you, I left my former employer who I was getting health benefits from and basically quit that job and have since had to transition to Cobra. Mm-hmm. my wife is pregnant, and it turns out that being pregnant in the state of Texas is a pre-existing condition. So our COBRA costs per month are pretty insane, more than our rent was on the Upper East Side in New York when I first moved to New York. And it's stressful. It's like, damn, why am I paying this much? And then you have like deductibles, like you're going and then you're paying money anyway. And it's very confusing. I'm like, wait, what am I paying for insurance for? Like, I'm still paying all this money.
Co-pays, out-of-pocket maximums, co-insurance. You're like, you have no idea how much this pregnancy is going to cost you probably.
No.
Like, and you're just like, you have to just take it, right? Like, okay, well, I guess that's what it is. Yeah. Right? It's like the only service in the country I can think of. It's like you go and you get a service and you have no clue what it's going to cost you. It's like a plumber coming into your house and like handing you a $2,000 bill for fixing the faucet. You're like, wait, hold on a second. Like, how can this be legitimate? You know? And so that just has to change.
Yeah.
And again, simplify things really, really easy. You know, with crowd health, it's like $500. That's what you're going to pay. You know, if you break your arm, $500. If you get, you know, have your baby, $500. If you have cancer, $500, right? Walk into the hospital, $500. Super simple. Yeah. And I think that's kind of the key to why we've been successful over, you know, the last year or so, is people understand it when they come in. Like, I don't have any questions about how much it's going to cost me, which is a key component.
Well, why did you start Crowd Health? Because I've been talking to Jonathan from 1031. He's very passionate about what you're doing, him being a doctor himself. And he said you got pulled out of retirement to do this?
I got pulled out of retirement. I was doing another healthcare technology company and I sold it to a private equity firm and it went, you know, super, super good. And so I was kind of retired there for a while. And then I didn't have healthcare from an employer. Most of us get healthcare from employers, like you mentioned. So I went over to healthcare.gov and I was kind of ignorant. I should have never done it, but I did. I went to healthcare.gov and chose a plan that kind of looked right. Like, there's literally 100 different options, you know, with different copays and deductibles and all these kinds of things and premiums. And I'm like, man, I don't know. Like, this one looks right. So I got one, and my little one, who was one at the time, was having recurring ear infections. So we went to the ear, nose, and throat doc and said, you need to get tubes in the ears. So we went to the local hospital and got tubes in her ears, 15-minute procedure, got the bill. $8,000. I was like, $8,000 for 15 minutes? Like, this is ridiculous. We were actually in the hospital for 45 minutes total, like in and out. Mm-hmm. It was like the fastest hospital trip I've ever been into. And so I was like, all right, well, I have insurance. Like, that's the whole point of insurance. And they sent me a note, snail mail, interestingly, and said it was medically unnecessary. And so we're not going to pay for it. So, you know, one, the ear, nose, and throat doc delayed his vacation by a day because he was so worried about her long-term hearing loss. Mm-hmm. Two, once we got the tubes in her ears, her recurring ear infection stopped. So, and they still come back and says it's medically unnecessary. So I had to stroke an $8,000 check to the local hospital and I was pissed.
So the hospital's defining that as unnecessary.
No, the health insurance plan.
Health insurance, okay.
Yeah, so the health insurance plan says we're not paying for it. It's between you and the hospital. And so I didn't know better. I just was like, okay, well, I don't want to go into collections. I don't want to, you know, have my credit score impacted. I guess I'll just have to pay for it again. Like, we just kind of have to bend over and take it, right? Yeah. Like, that's how health insurance is structured right now. So I had to write the $8,000 check. And the sucky thing about this is, right, like, I can do that. I've been, you know, super fortunate, but I don't know, 75, 80%, maybe more of Americans, they don't have $8,000 sitting in the bank to do this. Right. And this is for ear tubes. This is like a totally like benign, common thing. Mm-hmm. And that is putting people into bankruptcy. So 250,000 people last year went bankrupt, even though they had health insurance, because of medical bills. You're like, what the hell? Like, the whole point of health insurance is so that, like, it's there when you need it. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, it's just so broken in so many ways. I mean, we spend twice as much as the next country per capita on healthcare. I mean, it's screwed up. And it's not because of consumption. It's not like we're consuming way more healthcare. It's because of prices.
Yeah. And like you said, like, the insurance company is supposed to
negotiate
on your behalf, right? And they're like, no, we're going to So how much money are these insurance companies making?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars. Like the seventh and eighth largest company on the planet is Aetna and United Healthcare.
Yeah.
Like on the planet. This is not the United States. Like by revenue, they have more revenue than, you know, every other company in the planet except five or six.
And having interacted with United Healthcare specifically, like, they're not reinvesting in tech or anything like that. You go to their site and you try to, I think that's what we get, United Health via Cobra.
Yeah.
And like going to their site and trying to like just manage your healthcare account. It's very confusing.
Well, the you know, Obamacare, I guess it's about 10 years old or now, had a piece in there that said the health plans can only profit 15% of your premium. So on the outside looking in, you're like, oh, great. You know, the health plans can't fleece us, right? The problem with that is that
They jack up the premium
so they make more. So like if you have a $1,000 premium, the most they can make is $150. Right? Guess what? At $1,100 premium, they can make $165. So they're a for-profit, right? So of course their incentive is to have premiums increase. Totally screwed up.
Government trying to create a price ceiling.
Like the intention was good, I guess, right? But the ramifications of that are bad. I mean, right? I'm a healthcare guy. You're a Bitcoin guy. We both believe that when government gets involved in things, 99 times out of 100, they screw it up. Like the intent, arguably, let's just argue for the sake of it, is good. They just don't understand the basic economics of how the market works. So you take all the free market aspects out of healthcare and you get rising prices. It's just going to happen.
Well, you compound that negative externality of the government messing things up when it meddles with, I actually wrote about this on Friday, with the like fiat monetary system, the fact that they can just print money and misallocate it terribly at all these things that they want to put their hands in, just compounds the problem to a very high degree. Healthcare being one of the best examples, education being another, where they're like, yeah, we're gonna give everybody free education. We're gonna give out all these loans, and then the universities just jack their price up. Where I mean, some universities are charging like $80,000 a year now, and it's a coupling of government meddling and a unsound monetary system that enables it. Via the ability to print X nihilo and just throw it at all this stuff. And that's why I think the convergence of Bitcoin in any of these areas that government is meddling in is a very powerful tool to sort of fix things. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the incentives in the healthcare system are all messed up. Mm-hmm. And imagine what we can do if we can get the government out of it and combine it with Bitcoin, which is something you plan on doing with CrowdHealth too.
Yeah, we're a couple months away. So I think August 1st is going to be launch date. We've kind of talked about that in the team internally, and we're going to launch our Bitcoin version of what we're doing in just a couple of months. So we're right around the corner.
All right. So let's dive into like how CrowdHealth works now and how it will work when Bitcoin's incorporated.
Sure.
Did you find Bitcoin because you noticed it would provide this utility to CrowdHealth, where you've been a Bitcoiner and been thinking of ways to integrate it?
Yeah, I've been a Bitcoiner for not that long. I'm pretty new. I kind of joke that Bitcoin is my second language. You know, healthcare is my primary language. So I'm learning, and it's been a fun. And I feel like the community within Bitcoin has just been like so embracing of anybody who's willing to sit here and be like, dude, I don't know everything, but I'm learning and I'm, you know, intrigued, and they're like, oh yeah, come on in, you know, like let's teach you. So, you know, I'm friends with Jimmy Song here in Austin. And he kind of orange pilled me about a year ago. And so started a year ago and have been investing, you know, over the last year. And so fairly new to Bitcoin, but my, first kind of love is healthcare. So when I had this thing happen with my daughter, I was like, man, we got to do something different here. You know, and so I've been uninsured for 2.5 years. And so my wife and I have kind of started building some tools that allow us to operate outside the health insurance system. And the culmination of that is CrowdHealth. And so we had a seed round last year of $6 million. We're going to raise, you know, another 10 to 15 here over the next couple of months. And So we're excited to get see that going. But, you know, basically what this is it's almost like an HSA, right? Instead of just putting your money into a health insurance company who holds this money in a big pot of fiat, right? Depreciating assets. You know, what if you could do that in Bitcoin? You know, like basically have a pot of Bitcoin instead of a pot of fiat, right? So again, the mechanics is you put money into an account every month. 25% of that is held in fiat. 75% is converted to Bitcoin. You hold that in, we're trying to do self-custody in a self-custody way. You're only going to touch that in case there's something big that happens that you need to pay for. Mm-hmm. The 25% in fiat is specific for just liquidity. Like we don't want you to sell your Bitcoin. So we're just going to have a little bit of fiat there for liquidity. And then if somebody in the community has a health event, like my family's, you know, daughter breaks her arm, right? It's $6,000. I'm, like I said earlier, I'm responsible for the 500 or committed to the 500. And then the 5,500 is, I asked 55 people in the community, will you throw in $100 to help me with my health event? Mm-hmm. And then you can say yes or no. It's up to you. It's more like crowdfunding. And if you say yes, then money is transferred from your account, $100 from your account into my account. And then once I get 55 people to say yes, I've got all the money I need in my account to pay for that health event. Mm-hmm. And so that's how that works.
And are these accounts held on the platform or in just your personal bank account?
They're held on. We start a bank account in your name, FDIC insured at a bank. And so that money is held, the fiat is held in a bank account that is under your name.
Okay.
So, and the great thing is if you decide to leave CrowdHealth, it's your money. You take it with you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like a health insurance plan where you're putting money in and it disappears into the black hole of health and plan land. It's yours. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just setting up an account for you so that we know that you're actually putting money into an account and not, you know, spending it on whatever. Yeah. So that's the reason that we do that. So, and we've done this for, I don't know, a couple hundred bills so far. And it's ranged from a $47 pediatrician bill to a several hundred thousand dollar, brain aneurysm. Mm-hmm. So small bill, big bill, it's worked, a couple hundred times thus far and it works great. So
how does it work? Do you have like different communities? Is it one large community? Like how many people are in each? And
yeah, so our Bitcoin community is going to be our second community.
Okay.
And I need about 1,000 people to get it up and going. One, because infrastructure just chain, you know, charges, expenses. And then two is like, hey, if just you and I in a community, you know, and I get cancer or something, we'd be like, okay, all right, how are we going to get this cancer bit more, right? So I need 1,000 people to kind of viably do this. Mm-hmm. And so we have several hundred have signed up with us thus far on the Bitcoin side. So I need to get to 1,000 before I launch. I'll be ready to launch August 1st. And so anybody who hears us, who's interested, would love you to jump on over to our website and sign up.
Well, you got one here.
Crowdhealthbtc.com. And it's just, it shows you how it works. At the bottom, it's like, give me your email and the number of people in your house who are interested. And once we launch, we're going to send out an email to everybody and say, hey, we're ready to roll. Let's do it. And you can then sign up online. So there's no commitment right now. We're just it's kind of looking for interest.
Okay. I'm interested. So you got 4 for my family.
There you go.
and this is available nationally.
Yeah, all over. Yeah, nationally in Puerto Rico. So you got to have a U.S.-based address.
Yeah.
So
so you've been operating for a couple of years. Like how's it, like you said, you've paid hundreds of bills.
Yeah.
What's the date? Like, so I'm interested to see.
We started April of last year, so we're a little over a year old.
Yeah. And so.
And we've used, I saw this morning the stat, 24% of the money that you've put in, we've used for health events, which means that 76% of what you put in is still left in your account.
And like, what's the breakdown of like people who are contributing versus people who get sick and like need to pay bills? Like, do you have, that's the other thing too. Like, do you have, are you looking for people who are like healthier? to decrease risk for the overall group? Or
yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? Like we didn't set out to do that, but it is self-selecting, mm-hmm. right? We're doing something new. We're doing something different. It's tech-enabled. And therefore, the people who are self-selecting in are younger. Mm-hmm. Our average age is 34. So young crew. The average BMI is like 4 or 5 points lower than the national average. So they tend to be, you know, healthier. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be over 300 pounds and join us, you know, so, you know, that's the one stipulation. If you have a pre-existing condition, you know, all we do is we ask that you pay for your pre-existing condition for that first year. Mm-hmm. And then we'll fund up to 25,000 of that pre-existing in the second, 50 in the third, and 100 the fourth and beyond. So it's kind of like, look, if you have a pre-existing condition, you can't just jump on and then expect everybody else to pay for your stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. So, again, it's kind of a, maybe a, more of a libertarian leaning, you know, view on this, but, no, I think these Bitcoin, I was just at Bitcoin 22. I'm sure you were too. And down in Miami, it was like, look, everybody there is young, you know, everybody mm-hmm. there is feels more fit than the average, takes more personal responsibility in their health. And so we're setting up a crowd of just folks that do Bitcoiners only. You're going to be funding other Bitcoiners only. And so I think it's going to be a really healthy crowd is my guess, probably more healthy and a little bit younger than my existing crowd.
Yeah. And what do you think the biggest mental hurdle is for people to go from like traditional health insurance to something like crowd health?
Yeah. We just got, you know, stuck in our mind. We've been conditioned to think, oh, you got to have health insurance, you know? And I feel like that's why I'm so excited about presenting this to the Bitcoin community, because we have already gotten over the hurdle of like, this is the way that you have to do it, mm-hmm. right? You have to pay with these dollar bills in my pocket, right? Like, no, you don't have to do that. Like, that's not the only way. There is another way. And so I think it's our biggest objection is typically from people who are risk averse and are like, I'm just not going to do something new. And I was like, man, I think ours is way less risky than going with an insurance plan, right? Like, I got rejected on an $8,000, you know, tubes in my daughter's ears when the ENT told me, ear, nose, and throat doc told me that it had to happen. And in fact, if you go to healthcare.gov, one out of every six claims last year was rejected, was denied. So you have a one out of six chance of getting your bill denied. And we've paid thus far 100% of the bills that have come in. We've gotten them paid, right? Yeah. So I was like, I think going to United is more risky than coming to us, but, and you know, me and my family are on it. All of our people are on it. So we believe in it. And, so I don't, you know, if you're in Tennessee, it's one out of every three. If you're with healthcare.gov, if you live in Texas where we are now, it's one out of every five. Those are real, like legitimate, you know, probabilities.
Yeah. Like you said, I mean, $8,000, you mentioned a stat earlier, but the stat that always sticks in my mind is something like 60% of Americans couldn't afford a $400 emergency expense without going into debt.
And now 50 to 60% of Americans have medical debt on their credit card.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a problem. Like that's riskier to me. So here's the crazy thing, right? Is the government tells the insurance plans that they can market that they promise to pay. You know, it's a guarantee. That's a part of insurance. They will guarantee that they'll pay your health insurance, yet they don't. The government says to me, you can't guarantee. And if you do guarantee your health insurance, you're considered health insurance. And therefore you've got, you know, thousands of pages of regulations that you have to live by, yet I'm actually getting the bills paid. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those really screwed up situations. But
hey, I mean, it seems like you're actually providing better insurance than the actual insurance industry.
Yeah. Well, it's assurance, you know, instead of insurance, you know, we're not insurance. That's one of the things I want to let, you know, folks know. We're not insurance. We're not guaranteeing that your bill is paid. We can't do that, you know, or regulators will send me cease and desist. We were just talking about it earlier. Yeah. You know, and so we're not insurance. We are a different way of doing that. Just like Bitcoin is not dollar bills, right? Like it is not.
Yes.
There are some similarities for sure, but they are not dollars. This is not health insurance.
What's another way to pay for your healthcare? And we talked 2 weeks ago now at this point, and we were talking about the Libertarian Hospital in Oklahoma that has proven at the hospital level that you can do healthcare a different way. And this is just like another way to do that. It's like they mm-hmm. actually are upfront about the cost of their procedures mm-hmm. and allow people to pay
yeah.
in cash up
front. I think I told you the story a couple weeks ago, but I'll tell it again. But we had a member in Wisconsin had to have heart surgery. The local hospital in Wisconsin, which is like owned by one health system, like, so they have a monopoly up there. It was $83,000 for their surgery there. We found them one in Chicago, which is about an hour and a half away, for $44,000. We found them one in Oklahoma City that was $22,000. So it's like 1,000 miles away and it's $60,000 difference. So we stuck them on, you know, two first class flights to, or plane tickets down to Oklahoma City, from Milwaukee to Oklahoma City, put them up in the nicest hotel in Oklahoma City in the suite, for 3 days, and we're still saving $55,000. And we paid them, you know, $2,500 to go down there and do it. Right.
How does that work?
We, like, as a part of the health event, you know, we went and we crowdfunded their surgery, their flights, their hotel, and $2,500. And it was still, you know, more than $55,000 less than what their local hospital was. Right. So we can do crazy things like that because, and by the way, this heart surgeon in Oklahoma City was like a center of excellence. Like, he's done more of these things than almost anybody in the country. And so who would you want to go to? The person in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. who never does these, or the guy in Oklahoma City who will do this for 25% of what that guy will do them. And he does them all the time. Right. So that's just like United Healthcare would never do that. You know, yeah. Aetna would never do that. But we can do that.
Well, this gets back to the concept of like negotiating on behalf of
yeah.
the people who are a part of crowd health mm-hmm. or part of like an insurance plan. You're actually going out negotiating, looking for the best deals for these procedures and healthcare mm-hmm. around the country. What's that like, that process like?
Yeah, we have one here in Austin. A woman tore her ACL playing pickleball, of all things.
Pickleball is like blowing up right now.
I know. It's crazy. You know, and the health plan pricing is like $20,000 for an ACL replacement in Austin. And so we got it for $13,000 with, again, one of the best orthopedic surgeons in town. And the reason why he'll do that is we're going to pay him in cash, right? Mm-hmm. The day of, right? So we do all the crowdfunding beforehand. She has the money ready to go on the day of her surgery. She pays him on the day of the surgery. And so the doc is like, wow, I get paid cash. You know, otherwise he'd have to wait 60 or 90 days for a health insurance plan to pay him. They would haggle with him. He's not sure exactly how much they're going to pay him. You know, so we take out all of those risks. We pay him on the day in cash. And he's like, dude, this is great. Like, can you bring me more people? I'm willing to give you serious discounts if you'll pay me in cash. Doctors, about 30% of their time is spent with health insurance plans. And so if we can give them 30% of their time back, they're willing to take significant discounts because one, they just want to take care of their patients. Like, that's mm-hmm. why they got into medicine, not haggling with health insurance companies. So, the doctors love it almost as much as the members love it.
Yeah. You hear a bunch of horror stories about how a lot of doctors' work is a bunch of administrative bullshit.
Yeah,
that
totally.
They don't want to deal with at all. Yeah, it's very sad as a society. We've gotten to a point where we've made healthcare hard for people in a time when society's supposed to be advancing technologically, intellectually, and we're supposed to be moving forward. It seems like in some areas, again, where the government tends to meddle, that things have become materially worse off. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just talk broadly about healthcare, not even like the services, just like health of your average American. It's
yeah,
in a woeful state.
Well, it's a $4 trillion industry in this country, which is probably one of the biggest industries on the planet. Like, 4 trillion is bigger than all GDPs of any country except us, China, and Japan. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's huge.
Yes.
And so there's just lots of money to be made, right? So you got the brokers, you got, you know, everybody's in the middle of it and wants a little piece. One of the other things that's crazy, it's interesting to me, may not be to your audience, but, you know, when these doctors bill health insurance plans, they have to bill through an electronic health record. And the electronic health record takes between 6% and 10% of the revenue for just billing.
What? Right?
Your Visa or your MasterCard or whatever takes 2.25, something like that percent. Mm-hmm. You know, with Bitcoin is becoming almost frictionless. And so, you know, just to think that the electronic health record takes that right off the top, which, you know, the doctor doesn't get, right? It's all these people just biting away at the total cost here. And it just, we get rid of all of that.
Well, then you get into the whole incentive of like, is the industry actually incentivized to make people healthier?
Yeah. Well, absolutely not.
Which is really fucked up. When you think about, I mean, FDA putting out the food pyramid, which made us all fat. And I mean, not the pyramid itself, but normalizing the, mm-hmm. the consumption of shit, which increases healthcare costs. The opioid epidemic is another thing that you point to. And like, these people really don't care about health. They're pushing pills on people because it's very lucrative. I mean, I don't want to get kicked off YouTube, but there was in the last couple years, people favored newer treatments over older generic ones because the generic ones weren't very profitable. Again, like, do you think there is just a nefarious incentive system where people in the industry are literally not incentivized to make sure that the end patient is healthy at all?
For sure. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt in my mind. There's a nefarious... And look, and so we can point fingers at people at health insurance, and I don't particularly, you know, love the folks that are running these health insurance companies, but they are responding to how do I make as much money as possible, right? They're working within the framework the government has given them, which has allowed them to make a ton of money, you know, on us, and it has allowed them to be able to deny some of these claims and get away with it, right? So. Is that nefarious or is that just, you know, playing the game, you know, hate the player, hate the game, but you know, what is it? Right. And so the game is just so screwed up that they're just playing the game.
Yeah. I mean, with opioids specifically, I forget what documentary it was where they went in, they, the whole concept of like healing pain or something like that I think they literally had to get something changed or approved by a regulator to say, no, we can treat pain. Over like a specific disease, and that opened the floodgates.
Well, that was totally screwed up. I mean, the whole opioid thing was totally screwed up.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have, you know, one pain doctor in Bum, Kentucky or whatever it was, you know, with a 10,000% more opioids than the guy in, you know, downtown, you know, Manhattan or whatever, it's like something's screwed up here. So there's some nefarious things going on there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So how... Crowd health changes the incentives. Does Bitcoin change the incentives at all in your mind?
Well, I think it does. I mean, look, for one other quick thing on crowd health is the way we make money is just a subscription. Mm-hmm. So you're paying us $25 a month to be on the platform. It's a platform fee. That's our primary way of making money. So we actually are incentivized with everybody else to grow the community, mm-hmm. right? And the more people you have in the community, the better you are, better off everybody is. So totally aligned incentives.
Well, that was one of my questions I wanted to ask. Like, is this scalable? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And then with the other revenue source that we have is, say, you know, what the health plan pays versus what we negotiate, we take some of the difference. Mm-hmm. So it actually incentivizes us to reduce cost as much as possible. Right. So again, totally aligned with the membership base. So, you know, I think we're very aligned, no perverse incentives there. And we're very transparent on how we do that. So you can go on our website right now, even if you're not a member, and you can be like, oh, this is how they make their money. That's how it should be. And then I think for Bitcoin, you know, right now we have this inefficiency, right? Where we have these big pools of capital that are depreciating, right? And so you have to overcome that. To overcome that, your premiums go up. And I was like, if we can get a decentralized pool of capital in Bitcoin where the asset is actually going up, like, you know, people roll their eyes when I say this, but I was like, man, I think there's an opportunity with Bitcoin that, you know, folks like you and I who are willing to do this may never have to pay healthcare again, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, if Bitcoin does what we think it's going to do, and that's why we're all, you know, in this, I think there's that opportunity that you're, you know, a few hundred bucks a month over time builds up to, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of, you know, assets sitting there that you can use for healthcare or you can hold on to, right? But I think there is a scenario in which you don't have to pay for healthcare again, right? Because you've got this asset that now is really, really valuable.
I mean, the way I described it to my wife, because again, she's one of those who's like, oh, I don't know, we can go off like regular insurance. It's like, honey, we're going to speculative attack our future healthcare costs.
That's right.
That's right. It's the way I view it, at least.
Yeah.
When we join crowd health, and it makes so much sense. If Bitcoin does what it continues to do or has done, which I think it will, because I think the incentives of Bitcoin and its adoption are very apparent. Like, this is a no brainer.
Yeah.
Like, and then on the doctor side too, like maybe you start getting them some skin in the game on the Bitcoin, and then they're incentivized to start stacking, and over time they're able to lower their costs or their prices at the end of the day. Like, could this
have a
crazy effect on the overall pricing across the healthcare industry, not only on the assurance side, but on the actual delivery of the product at the end of the day?
Well, I think, you know, most people within Bitcoin want it more widely adopted, more people to be, you know, on the bandwagon. And I think that if the doctors can get on the bandwagon in a $4 trillion industry, it could be a really mover. I mean, it could be a mover in Bitcoin. You get $4 trillion pouring into, you know, or even a small fraction of $4 trillion pouring into Bitcoin. That is going to move the price up.
Yes.
Right. It just is. So you need more. And we're going to ask every doctor, is like, look, do you want to be paid in Bitcoin or do you want to get paid in, you know, fiat? Like, it's up to you. Like, that's going to be something that's just a part of our normal course. And a lot of doctors will be like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, but it's good to have the conversation then. It's like, okay, here's why you should take it.
Here's a touch point. It's a touch point.
And they need multiple touch points.
Yeah.
And doctors are the most respected profession in the country. It's doctors and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a bunch of well-respected folks who've got some capital, right? Most of these doctors make decent money. Getting on the Bitcoin bandwagon, I think there's a movement that can start there.
Yeah.
If it starts within healthcare, then like, watch out.
Right.
So
start everywhere. Healthcare, energy, the ranching industry. Let's get all these very important sectors bought in. That's what's making me very bullish about Bitcoin in the United States specifically. Obviously, you have a lot of people lobbying politicians, and we had the Bitcoin Mining Council send something to the EPA this week. But I think if you just look around at the natural grassroots growth between individuals, particular industries, if you can kickstart the healthcare industry, it's going to get to a point within the next few years where it's undeniable that it is beneficial, and that if the government were to try to take it away from all these integral sectors, there would be backlash that would be very palpable for those elected officials.
And, and impact their ability to get reelected.
Yes.
Like, look, get on the bandwagon, or else, what is it, 40 million people or something like that are in Bitcoin or maybe more crypto or whatever the number is. But it's like, it's a big enough population that you got to think they start having some sway.
Yeah, I think it's happening.
Yeah, agreed.
And then
agreed.
Back to crowd health.
Yeah.
And the doctor's incentives too. This is a question that hops on my mind as we've been talking here. Like, could you argue, even though the doctors within crowd health are selling their services for lower cost because you're negotiating down because you're able to pay them right away and all that, could you argue they can actually make more money in the long run by engaging in this model because it would bring more people to actually go get healthcare? Because you can make the argument that a lot of people actually don't get things looked at or go to the doctors because they're worried about like the cost of insurance or a procedure.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. I mean, I think it's at a minimum break even, you know, and if it's break even and your emotional well-being is much, much higher, then it's a win, right? So just, you know, for your audience, one of the crazy things about this is that the doctors oftentimes have to call the health insurance plans to say, hey, can I do this procedure? And they're talking to somebody at the health insurance plan. It's called a pre-authorization. That is not a doctor. So can you imagine like a doctor calling a non-doctor at some, you know, actuarial goofball sitting in the bowels of a health insurance plan that says, can I do X, Y, and Z pharmaceutical or, you know, knee replacement or whatever? And that person says, no, you can't. Right. So, and by the way, in that claims, 1 out of 6 claims on healthcare.gov, that's just the claims that are actually submitted to the health insurance plan. It does not include all the pre-authorizations that get rejected by the health insurance plan. So your health insurance plan is actually the one who is dictating what mm-hmm. care can be provided. Right. And so that the you think about it, just the doctors being like, this is BS, man. Like the health insurance plan should not be able to tell me what I need to do for my patient. Like I'm the doctor. I'm the one that spent whatever, a dozen years in residencies and medical school and all this kind of stuff. And so they hate that shit, like hate it. And so we can take that away from the requirement. And just like, look, doctors, we trust you. We trust you to make the best decision. And yeah, are some doctors going to be stupid about it? And yeah, for sure. But we are spending way more money trying to keep them from fraudulent behavior than the actual fraudulent behavior that's going to happen. Yeah. Right. So they love this. They absolutely can make more money. And they can have emotional well-being that is well beyond. And by the way, more doctors in the last year have quit than in any other time in history because of, one, the pandemic, two, health insurance plans and government intervention, right? And so they're like, we need something for the doctors to get reinvigorated by, you know, practicing medicine. We think we can be, you know, one of those pieces.
Yeah, it's a scary thought. Have doctors quitting just because they're tired of the bureaucratic bullshit, the Better Business Bureau bullshit, as they say.
Supply demand goes wacky, right?
Well, like, you're seeing right now in airline industry too. All the pilots are like, you know what?
Screw this.
Mandates in many areas are just like, all right, we're retiring. And you have like a shortfall of something like 60,000 pilots right now in the United States, right? Which is insane.
Right. And I think a lot of this is because of the government intervention. Back to government intervention, right? This whole mask thing, we won't get there, but you know what I'm saying? Like yeah. All these crazy things that have happened over the last couple of years have put a lot of the industries that we rely upon, including healthcare, on tilt, right? Because they just can't, they're tired of it.
Well, I mean, I've had a very direct experience with the insanity of the mask mandate specifically. My son, we were talking about him before, he's 2. He just turned 2 earlier this year, and because of the mandate, hasn't obviously been able, he wasn't in the first 2 years of his life, even though we had him hanging out with his cousins and stuff. Because of the mask mandate, like he was like a couple months behind on speech development. And mm-hmm. so like we engaged with a speech pathologist to help catch him up. And she's been doing an incredible job. But like, when she first showed up, she was wearing a mask. And my wife asked her, she's like, are you going to be wearing the mask when you do the speech pathology? And she was like, yeah, we have to due to like policy. Luckily we were able to convince her like, hey, we're not going to snitch on you. And she's been doing it without it, but like they're literally sending speech pathologists to teach kids how to speak, which an integral part of that is
looking at lips, right?
And seeing this.
It's like, how crazy is this stuff?
It's insane. I mean, it's literal clown world.
It is clown.
It's almost like they're trying to see how stupid we are and how much people will take to... It's like a touring test or something like that. It's like, it's insane. Like I'm getting angry right now. Just thinking about it. Like you should show the mask. Like you're going to do speech lessons with my son with a mask on. This doesn't make any sense. And they were like, oh, sometimes I can bring a clear mask. It gets a little foggy, but like it's better Jeez. Than this. And I want to be clear. The woman is working with my son is incredible. We love her. And luckily we've worked out this deal in private where it's like, you don't have to wear the mask. We're not going to snitch on you.
That's great.
But
that's great.
To think there's families out there that haven't been able to convince their speech pathologist to do this is insane.
It's insane. I mean, yeah. Multiply that by 10 with just healthcare, some of the insanity that I could tell you about, you know, it's again, the perverse incentives are insane. Absolutely insane.
That's good. Let's get in some more. So I guess it's let's completely destroy the healthcare industry. Like what are other insane things?
Well, you know, the other things too is like we live in Austin. You know, there are 2 hospital systems in Austin.
ARC and
it's St. David's mm-hmm. and Ascension. Okay. Right? Ascension Seton okay. are the 2 biggies, right? And mm-hmm. so they own Austin. You cannot provide health insurance in Austin unless you have both of those lined up, right? And so they're a duopoly. They're a duopoly in Austin. So even if United Healthcare wanted to negotiate with Ascension or St. David's, they can't, because they can't lose one of them. So it's one of the biggest companies on the planet who can't actually negotiate with the hospital system because they're negotiating against a duopoly. But you and I can go in, and we have more negotiating power than United Healthcare does in that situation. So imagine this, right? You know, a cancer or whatever it is, it's $1 million bill. The health plan or the health system will look at you and be like, okay, you know, how are you going to pay $1 million bill? You probably can't. So let's negotiate. So United Healthcare will pay $1 million. You know, if we were their patient, the Schoonovers will probably pay more like $250,000, and they'll do it $10,000 a month for 24 months. Right. Mm-hmm. So 0% interest, or actually negative interest, because due to inflation. That the Schoonovers would have to pay for that. And so if you think about it within the crowd health example, let's just say we've got, you know, a couple thousand people, that's $5 per person per month for a couple years for a catastrophic claim. Mm-hmm. So instead of paying $1 million, we're paying $250,000, we're paying it $10,000 a month over 2 years. And so it just, you know, minimizes that huge, you know, bill. And we're able to do that because actual market forces are working, right? I can actually negotiate with the hospital. There's actually federal code that says if somebody provides you with a service and they haven't given you the price beforehand, they have to negotiate a fair price. Mm-hmm. That is federal code.
Law.
So you can go into the emergency room. They're not going to give you a fair price when you come out. You can negotiate with them. And that's what we do on behalf of our members. So we're getting like 60% negotiations on average. The bigger bills, you get 80 or 90%. So that's one of the crazy things. Like, we as individuals have more negotiating power than United Healthcare does. You know, one like real like tactical thing your audience can do, whether you join Crowd Health or not, you know, you walk into your doctor, you walk into the hospital, and they give you these, still like we're in freaking 2022, and they're giving you these clipboards of like 5 or 6 sheets of paper that you fill out the same questions every time, mm-hmm. right? And you're like, guys, haven't you figured out how to do this yet? But anyway, one of them is the personal financial responsibility form, which it basically says when you sign, it says you agree to pay whatever we charge you, right? Mm-hmm. And you sign it. And most of us just like fly through it. Like, we just don't even pay attention. And what we tell our members to do is mark through that sentence and put, I agree to pay appropriate charges or reasonable charges. Either one of those works. And that then allows you after the fact to go in and negotiate with them, because you didn't sign your life away. So every time you go into the doctor's office, they'll give you that sheet of paper, cross through it. And not once have we had any doctor come back and say, oh yeah, we can't do this. They'll always do it. And it gives you now the prime negotiating
leverage.
On that doctor or that hospital.
I would imagine 99% of people don't even know this is a thing.
Don't even know it. I didn't know it. I was in healthcare before. I didn't know it until I, you know, started doing research. And I was like, how can these hospitals do this? Oh, well, you signed your life away when you went in. Oh, and by the way, you had a concussion, or you had, you know, a broken hand, or you, mm-hmm. your blood was gushing. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, sign this. Right. And you're like,
Get me in the room, please.
Get me in the room. And then you walk into the emergency room and you're on insurance, right? And the anesthesiologist is out of network, because all the anesthesiologists in the hospital, all the ER doctors in the hospital aren't actually employed by the hospital. They're separate companies, mm-hmm. that may or may not be in the same network as the hospital. So, right, when you're, it's crazy, right? So when you talk about your deductible, it's like, hey, a family of four will probably have a deductible somewhere between $4,000 and $8,000. That's in network. If you go to the hospital and they have a out of network ER, then you're paying, that doesn't count towards your deductible. I mean, that is screwed up, right? Like, and you don't even have anything to say. You could be unconscious going into the ER. You have no idea if the doctor working on you is in network or out of network. And the impact on you is thousands, could be tens of thousands of dollars.
And in that example you just put forth, you're forced into that situation.
You have no way of getting out of it.
How'd it get this complex? And like, it feels like there should just be a streamline. Like, if you own a hospital, you should have ER doctors, anesthesiologists.
Yeah.
Is that just not scalable? Like, why has it gotten to this piecemealed?
It almost like the hospital is becoming real estate companies, right? Like, they want to own the real estate, and they have people, you know, pay in to be a part of the services. Mm. And then they get the funds from that little piece. And so you got these hospitals that could be 30 or 40 or 50 different companies all providing care within that building. And they're all on different networks and all kinds of crazy stuff. But you can't tell the ambulance, take me to St. David's as opposed to, you know, Ascension, Maine, mm-hmm. right?
It's just not the way it works.
Just not the way it works.
No.
They'll take you to where they want to take you, and they're going to cover their ass, right? So they're going to take you to the best ER, best quote unquote ER that they can take you to make sure they can take care of your issue. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're going to take you to the trauma center if there's any, like,
if you're shot.
Yeah. Or even if there's something even close to trauma, because if they don't take you to a trauma center and they take you to like a tier two hospital and you actually had trauma, then now you have liability for taking them to the wrong place. Mm-hmm. Right. So they're always going to upcharge you to cover their ass.
Well, then that's another thing. Just like ambulance cost in and of itself.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't call 911 because like, I'm not taking an ambulance. It's going to be like $4,000.
Yeah. We had a woman who was on one of these short-term health plans. It was called Golden Rule, and it was done by United. So she fell in her bathroom, hit her head, called 911. The ambulance took her 15 miles. It was $3,500 for the ambulance. She was in the hospital for 5 hours, $35,000 for the hospital bill. And United decided to pay $1,500 and stuck her with the rest.
What?
Stuck her with the rest.
So she got stuck with a $37,000 bill?
It was like 33 or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it was stupid. So yeah, $35,000 was including ambulance. So the hospital bill was like 31 or something like that. Okay. Yeah, stuck with the rest. And so she came to us. She's like, oh my gosh, Crowd Health, can you help? Because one, I want to be a part of you because this, you know, short-term health plan screwed me. And two, can you help me negotiate? So we negotiated that down from $35,000. We got everything down except the ambulance. She's only paying $1,500 out of pocket. So the $32,000 went down to $1,500. The ambulance is still $3,500, and we're suing them in small claims court on her behalf.
What's the case revolve around? How are you able to sue them?
Yeah, for, you know, this back to this, they have to negotiate with us mm-hmm. because, you know, it's code. And United Healthcare paid them $500, and so they want another $3,500 from this woman. And so we say, look, we didn't have an agreement with you, right? So you have to negotiate. And you're not willing to negotiate a fair price. What is a fair price for 15 miles? And by the way, they couldn't get an IV in her. They didn't provide her any of those services. And they charged her for all of those services.
Really?
Even though they didn't provide them. So we're suing them in small claims court. And that's the one thing we'll do. We'll provide you legal assistance in the case that the hospital just doesn't want to negotiate. Right? Which is not something you would do on your own, but we'll do it.
Yeah. How long do these negotiations take usually if a doctor or an ambulance provider? A
couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Typical couple months. The 32,000 to the it's around 30, 32, something like that, 1,000 to 1,500 took a couple weeks.
Yeah.
The ambulance one now has been going on for several months because they just won't negotiate.
Yeah. You think these people would want to help people?
You'd think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does this go into like dental and
doing dental and vision? We're starting it in October.
Okay.
So in the same thing, but you know, right now the dental and vision plans, they totally suck. Like dental plan is basically you're paying for your cleanings.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't do your cleanings, you basically lose out. Right. Yep. Vision pays for your glasses, which is a couple $100. So you're paying for a set of glasses or set of contacts or something. We want to do it different. We're like, look, in your car, you have auto insurance, you pay for your gas, you pay for your tires, you pay for your oil change, right? Like if you want to go in our dental or vision plan, like you can pay for the oil change, right? But if something big happens, that's when you really need something, mm-hmm. right? So if, you know, wisdom teeth or something like that for your, or, you know, need crowns or implants or TMJ or one of those things that cost several thousand dollars to fix, like that's when you really need something. You don't need it for your $200 cleaning.
No.
Right. So ours is going to be structured a little bit different than your typical dental insurance, but I think it's going to be way better than, you know, the dental insurance you get from Humana or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's something I've foregone dentist visits in the past. I'm like, I don't feel like fucking paying for this.
Yeah.
Like,
the other thing we're going to do too is virtual primary care. So instead of having to go to your doctor's office, right, which sucks, like you plan it, you got a half an hour to get there, you know, you sit in the waiting room, all that kind of stuff. We're going to, it's free virtual. So your primary care is included in your membership. So you just talk to the same doc every time, virtual, you know, a couple times a year. And if you have any other issues throughout the year, you have his or her phone number. You can call him. You can text him. And that's included in your membership. Oh, so, you know, and I think, again, the Bitcoin community just being a little more technologically advanced than the typical, you know, American, I think will dig, you know, being able to do their primary care virtually as opposed to having to show up in the office.
Yeah. And another thing, again, going back to like Bitcoiners, tending to be younger and maybe more in shape, like, how can we shift to, and this is like a more broad question, but like shifting the conversation from care after the fact to preventative care. Like, mm-hmm. we need people to be healthier. I mean, obviously we have diabetes, heart disease are through the roof in this country. Like, how would the landscape of the healthcare industry switch if we actually became healthier as individuals within this country?
Yeah, well, I mean, 80% of chronic conditions are preventable. You know, and it's two primary drivers. It's what you eat and how often you work out. You know, if everybody ate, you know, decent and worked out three times a week, our costs would go down, you know, substantially. You know, but what is the easy thing to eat that's low cost? And it's crap, right? It's like carb heavy crap. And that's, you know, primarily shoved down our throat by big corporations like Pepsi and Coke and all those people, right? So, yeah, I mean, it would totally change the landscape is if we could eat better and work out. We're, you know, our third crowd is actually going to be a trainers crowd because all the trainers throughout the country, most of them are 1099s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a crowd of trainers also. We're going to be able to, you're going to be able to stick your Apple Watch or your Fitbit or your Whoop or whatever those are, you know, to directly into our app so that if you work out, you know, three times a week, you'll actually get a reduction of how much you have to put in to incentivize, you know, healthier habits. So we're trying to do some things like that to incentivize. Ultimately, you're gonna have to feel it in your pocketbook. Like there's gotta be a way that people feel it so that are incentivized to eat better and work out. Like, I don't see any other way to reduce that than incentivizing people in the pocketbook.
Yeah. Man, God, it's all so fucked. Like compounded, like a crisis of bad incentives in the health industry and then like a crisis of actual health outside of it.
Yeah.
Which is.
Yeah, man, you know, interestingly, like, if you line us up against the other European countries, the actual consumption of healthcare is not that different. Like we do some things here in the United States, a lot of cover your ass stuff. Like we do twice as many labs as, you know, European countries. We do twice as many cesarean sections as European countries. But other than that, like one or two other little things, like the consumption of healthcare is pretty flat, right? So, and we're still getting twice as much. We have to pay twice as much for it, the same consumption. So it's mostly in pricing. But I would also say that, you know, some of the European countries too are also, you know, way overweight, you know, BMIs of 30 plus, right, on average. So we got to get that fixed.
Yeah, we're turning into that Wally society of like eventually we're just going to be fat people.
Yeah, exactly.
In these floating vehicles that are just getting pushed everywhere. It's got to change. And
The current structure ain't going to do it.
No.
Because like you said earlier, like the health plans actually make more money if you're sick. So there is no incentive anywhere within the healthcare system for you to get better.
Yeah.
Right now.
No. Which is, how do you like shake people awake to that?
Yeah.
I think most people, a lot of people understand. Or I think the opioid crisis specifically, it was like an aha moment. Like, oh shit. Like, these people are not in it to make us healthier. You think of like my generation, I'm 30. Like I remember in high school, kids taking like 90 milligram XR Adderall because they had ADD. And
right.
Become dependent on it. And still to this day are probably dependent on that Adderall, that amphetamine, which is not good for you at all in the long run.
There's a lack, not to get too deep, but there's a lack of clear purpose within many in our society. And when you don't have a purpose, you look for medication in a variety of things. One actually being medication, you know, or two, it's food, you know, and that ultimately is what I think the problem is, right? It's like just a lack of purpose. And that's why I think of these, a lot of folks in Bitcoin, man, like you've found a purpose to rally around, which, you know, has some biochemical, you know, impact on your brain. Be like, man, I'm fired up to get up in the morning and going after a mission. And the vast majority of people in this country don't have a mission. And if they do, they decided it's going to be a mission of ridiculousness. Like, you know, we could go through the list of political, you know, topics here that mm-hmm. are just mission based that make no logical sense. And you know, it's just a lack of purpose, man. When you find people with lack of purpose, they're typically overweight. They typically don't work out, and therefore their healthcare costs are going to be, you know, three or four times, you know, the ones who do work out and do have a BMI of, you know, mid to low 20s.
Yeah. No, and again, I think this all comes back. It's something I've been saying for years now, fix the money, fix the world. It's all, we're just thrown on this proverbial hamster wheel of paycheck to paycheck, do this mindless Excel monkey work.
Yeah.
And for a job that you really don't care about. But there's a bunch of people in the health insurance industry who are some of those people who feel like they lack purpose at the end of the day.
We're trying to build, man, like a community feel about this. I mean, it's one of the things I really love about, you know, Bitcoin. I kind of mentioned this earlier. Like I was a little bit hesitant to join into the whole Bitcoin thing, right? Because from the outside looking in, it is this group of folks who are kind of self-sovereign and kind of don't want anybody else messing with them. Don't want the government messing with them, right? It's like they even call it the sovereign human or whatever that
sovereign individual.
Sovereign individual. Thank you.
Yeah.
But the community, man, is like really powerful for a bunch of sovereign individuals. You know, it's an interesting juxtaposition. It's for all these sovereign individuals, the community is one of the most powerful communities that I've actually witnessed, right? And so we're trying to use some of that affinity in our service where it's like, look, man, like you can take care of yourself and it's going to benefit everybody who's in your community. You can act like an idiot and eat crap and become overweight and don't work out. It's going to impact everybody in the community. And like, these are your community of your bros, right? Like there's hopefully that will be enough to change some behavior. I think it could be, you know, I think it could be. So it's just kind of an interesting piece of Bitcoin that it was probably my biggest shock as somebody new into Bitcoin is just the tightness of that community, but also like the willingness to teach, you know, people not, you know, with, you know, lots of Bitcoin experience. Like, man, I've had so many people like, call me if you have a question or like, mm-hmm. You don't know how to store this stuff. Like, let me tell you, like, here's the difference between, you know, cold storage and, you know, custodial and self-custodial, you know, and I'm like, oh man, cool. Like, thanks for, you know, being that support. And I think in healthcare it's similar, like a health plan, you're out on your own, right? Like you got to figure it out. You know, the health plan is not on your side. You know, for us, so I'm like Crowd Health, like you have somebody to call and it's one person in our organization. They're yours. They're called your care advocate. Mm-hmm. You can call them anytime. Every time you call us, you're going to talk to the same person. So if you have a healthcare event like that you have a question on, you could talk to five different people and tell them your health event five different times and you're like, holy crap, I'm going through hell right now and I can't get anybody to like engage. And by the way, that my person might not even be in the United States. No. Right? Like they don't have a clue, right? With us, it's like the same person every time, which is like hugely valuable. And one of the biggest like benefits of working with us, and that's what the feedback we've gotten is like, it's great just to be able to like get on the phone with somebody. And you're actually like, we give you their calendar, like, so you can like book 15 minutes with them. So you don't have to wait on the phone. You don't have to do any of that BS. It's like, you've got 15 or 30 or whatever minutes of her time that you need. That's, I think, just a huge, huge value. Yeah. Again, trying to build that community, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the conversation is really highly, we haven't said it directly yet, but we will now, like the insurance industry, the health insurance industry is dehumanized. People that are just inputs into an actuary formula of, do we give this money or not? Do we allow this to happen or not? They don't really care about your personal situation or what you're going through.
There's a fun meme out there. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like, you know, the evolutionary chain, right? Like you start with the monkey and then you get into the home, whatever it is, you know, it's like all the way up. And then it's like, it turns into barcodes, you know, at the very end, which is like truly like how we are being treated by health insurance. Like we're turning into barcodes ultimately, you know, that sucks.
No, it's every aspect, health insurance, the food industry, real estate, like when you talk about like MBS tranches, everything's just an input, like Excel function, like how much profit can I eke out of this? It's not to say the profit's a bad thing, but like the incentives of growth at all costs, quarterly growth, monthly growth, that is incentivized by this fiat monetary system where you have to outpace inflation. This again creates perverse incentives across everything. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about bringing like a sound money standard to the world in the digital age. Because again, you just need to fix those incentives. Imagine if you were incentivized to allocate capital as efficiently as possible and actually work to help somebody as cheaply as possible because you want to keep as much Bitcoin as you possibly can.
Yeah, what are the most screwed up things in the United States if you ask any Bitcoiner? Number one is going to be the monetary system. I'm pretty sure that the vast majority of people are going to say the monetary system, followed up by healthcare. Like, I mean, those have got to be one and two. I mean, if it's not one and two, it's the two of the top three. You know, there's a, I think it was Gallup 2 years ago that was, did a study on the most hated industries. Government was one, pharma was two, health insurance was three. And it's like, and that was done, I think, a couple of years ago. I don't think any of those things have gotten their reputations better over the last, you know, 3 years or 2 years. So
certainly not pharma.
Certainly not pharma.
No, it's disgusting how the last 2 years you're able to have, is it Scott Gottlieb? Is he the guy? Is the chairman of Pfizer?
Maybe.
He's just on CNN, CNBC every day. Like, go buy this vaccine and...
Now it's a pill now or something they're coming out with. You got to buy the pill to make sure you don't get COVID. And it's like, you know, but look, we can rip on pharma too. Pharma is 10% of the issue. Pharma is 10% of our total healthcare costs, right? So we can cut pharma in half and we're only down, you know, 5%, right? Like it's elsewhere, you know, and pharma is not to get off, right? They, you know, pay the ridiculous prices for these drugs. You know, and you have PBMs, right? With pharmacy benefit managers, which are basically the middleman between the drug makers and the health insurance plans. And they take a big chunk of revenue too. Then you have to go to the pharmacy and they take a chunk. Like there's so many people in the value chain.
Middlemen everywhere.
Like you just get rid of some of that stuff. And that's the other thing is prescription for us. You know, we send people to GoodRx, which cuts out the PBM middleman. Basically, and you get prescription drugs for like 60 or 70% less than, you know, through what your health plan pays for. You know, we just had a guy, he's actually a friend of mine who's on CrowdHealth and he woke up, didn't feel good. He jumped on his app. He pressed urgent care. Within 2 minutes, he's talking to an urgent care doc. He's like, you probably have strep throat. I'm going to give you a prescription for strep throat at the HEB right next to you. He goes to HEB. He uses our kind of pharmacy benefits. It's $6. He pays $6 and he's fine within 24 hours. I was like, that's how healthcare should be done.
What was that timeline? How many hours from app?
Well,
to
app, he pressed the, he said from the pressing the button on the app to talking to the doc was 2 minutes and 22 seconds.
Holy shit.
He was at the pharmacy 30 minutes later for his, you know, $6 prescription for strep. And he felt better within 24 hours.
So within 45 minutes, he had
within 45 medicine. Minutes, he had what he needed. Yeah. And he had to exit. I think his wife went and got the prescription for him. Right. So didn't even have to leave his house. Like, that's how healthcare should be done.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's not a lot of that you need to be, you know, in face to face with a doctor. What is he going to do? Like, do the little like knock on your knee? Is like, come on, like give me a break. You don't need that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying. We're trying to totally change how healthcare is being delivered, starting with the payment system. But if you can do most of that stuff virtually over an app on your phone or your computer, like that's how that should be done.
Yeah. 45 minutes, $6.
Yeah.
Fine 24 hours later.
Most of the time, the urgent care doc, they will take care of 90% of your issues. Mm-hmm. Quickly, remotely, you don't have to walk into urgent care.
I've been an urgent care maximalist for a while. Because I was like unemployed in my mid-20s, like right when I was 26 and I got kicked off my parents' health care.
Yeah.
And I just like YOLO'd. I was like, I don't need health insurance. I'm young. I'm fine. But then I got fined by Obamacare.
Yeah.
Because I didn't sign up for a plan.
Well, now that's no longer in place.
No.
So if you're in all but five states, you don't have to have health insurance.
Yeah.
I think Trump did away with that.
Good.
It was the individual mandate is what it was called. Got rid of that. So
it was a swift kick in the dick. I was unemployed. I was like willing to risk it. I was like, yeah, I don't need health insurance. And deep in unemployment, the government's just like, all right, you owe us $1,300. I was like, at the time, I was like, damn, this is material for me.
Yeah. California, Vermont, Rhode Island, DC, Massachusetts, and one other one. I can't remember what the other one is. There's five states in which you have to have health insurance. And so if you're in one of those states, you can still join CrowdHealth. You just have to get like, it's called a MEC. It's a minimum essential coverage, which is like another $100 a month. And that will satisfy most of those states' requirement.
Well, that's another thing about like the whole healthcare debate is the politicians. The government really plays to the emotions of the masses with like universal healthcare, especially particular politicians that lean a certain way. This whole concept of universal healthcare. I mean, you've got it in Canada, you've got it in Europe, you've got it in the UK, like the NHS system. Like, we need to bring that here to the United States. What would you say to people pushing the concept of universal healthcare as a human right?
We get so many people from Canada calling us, being like, hey, will you come to Canada? You know, we were trying to figure out regulatory wise, can we do that? But like, they are so fed up with their system in Canada that they want to use, you know, CrowdHealth so they can pay their doctors in cash. What I found out, I think this is true in Canada, you can't actually pay your doctors in cash. Like, you have to go through the system. Mm-hmm. So they don't like it. I mean, there was some crazy stats I saw a couple months ago. It's like, some guy tore his ACL or something like that. Like, had to wait, I think it was 4 or 5 months to actually get to the doctor. Right. So imagine having a torn ACL for 4 or 5 months. Then it was another 3 or 4 months to actually get the surgery. So you're like 7 or 8 months in and you're now just getting your surgery. And now you have another 6 or 7 months of rehab to get that right. Like, if y'all want to wait, like, 6 to 9 months for things that we can get next week in the United States, then go for it. Like, you know, have fun with that. Like, let's see how long that's going to last.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to have to choose, I think with this universal healthcare, one, the quality of our medical care is going to go down because more doctors are going to be like, screw this. We're not going to do this.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get paid less. You can't get paid the way that you get paid here. And we're going to have to wait. We're just going to have to be willing to wait months at a time for some
quality
of these
treatment.
these treatments.
Yeah. No, I also heard, I forget who I was speaking with. They run a company over in the United Kingdom. They're like, we can poach so much talent because we are one of the few companies that offers to pay for private health insurance.
Yeah.
Which apparently over there compared to the NHS, it's
way better.
You're waiting days instead of months.
Well, look, and you know, we can rip on our healthcare system, but the best doctors are here in the United States. right? The best hospitals are here in the United States. Where do all the Saudi princes go, you know, when they need to get their heart surgery? They come to the United States. Like there are hospitals in major US cities that have like a hotel suite level in their hospital that is set up like a hotel suite so that they can live, you know, people can live there while getting medical services, and they'll pay top dollar for it. So, you know, the doctors here are the best in the world. It's the system that the doctors operate within. It's the context that the doctors are in that is really screwing this up.
Well, screwing it up now, and like you think projecting into the future, like we should move quickly to fix the perverse incentives in the system, because will it prevent people from becoming doctors in the first place in the future?
Like, oh, I think so, absolutely.
Are people being disincentivized to get into the field at large because they see the morass of the bureaucratic bullshit that's been thrust onto the industry, and they're saying, I don't want to deal with that.
It'll be interesting to see how, you know, medical school applications go over the next couple of years. I haven't seen any data on it, but it would not shock me if they're like, screw this.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I know a bunch of docs who go through medical school and they're like, okay, I've got my MD. Now, do I really want to go and treat people, or do I want to go and work for a private equity firm or a hedge fund or, you know, one of these organizations that'll pay them five times as much as you'll get paid as a primary care doc?
Yeah.
Right. So why would you go and do that? You know, I don't know.
I think Jonathan at 1031 is an example.
Jonathan's one. Yeah.
Like, you know what? Yeah, I don't feel like dealing with all this bullshit anymore.
You know, some of your folks might know Ovik Roy. You know, Ovik is here in Austin. He had an awesome Bitcoin.
Ovik, if you're listening, I owe you your glasses. I'm going to get them back to you.
Ovik is actually on our board.
He's an incredible man.
Man, he's one of the smartest dudes I know. You know, and he went to Yale Medical School. So he went through, you know, 4 years of med school. He's like, I can go and be a doc, or I can go work at the hedge fund, you know, in New York. And he went and worked at a hedge fund. And I'm made a heck of a lot more money than he made in being a doc. And thank God he did, because he's one of the leading he's the thought leader on Bitcoin. I mean, he had an awesome article out, what, 3 or 4 months ago on just the impact of Bitcoin and how it could have it on our society, which is probably one of the most read Bitcoin articles ever, I'd imagine. He's just a thought leader in some of these things. In healthcare policy, he's trying to like get left and right to say, hey, listen, we want to take care of people. We want people to be more healthy. How can we do that in a bipartisan way? And he's just done a phenomenal job on taking a bipartisan approach to some of these. And he sits on my board. So he's, you know, I've got his ear, you know, thank God. Say, hey, how do we think about this?
Yeah, no, I think Ovik's doing an incredible job of really bridging a gap that seems to be getting wider in terms of partisan politics.
Yeah, you can go to his Twitter account. It's at Ovik, A-V-I-K. I'm giving him a shout out. And it's like, you can see the people who follow him. And it's like left leaders, you know, like House majority, House minorities, you know, leader, like all of these people from all angles, you know, Greg Abbott follows him and Gavin Newsom follows, like all these people follow Ovik. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, like he's doing very important work, because I think he realizes, which I think most people realize, at the end of the day, left versus right is somewhat of a false dichotomy. At the end of the day, we all have needs, and we all probably want the same thing, which is like be able to take care of our family, be able to take care of our health, have dignity with our work, be able to sustain ourselves via hard work. And the perverse incentives of the system that we've been thrust into don't allow that. So it just creates this friction where you're looking for somebody to point the finger at. And a lot of people in the political sphere do a good job of using red, blue to pit people against each other, swiping at branches when we're not getting to the core of the problem, which is these perverse incentive systems that have been erected.
That's why I think, like, you know, I have Ovik on my board, because I think that crowd health can be very, very interesting to people on the left and folks on the right. Like, if you want, you know, the kind of free market to move, which is a bit more of a right-leaning crowd, that's all we're about. We're trying to create free market economy within the healthcare. If you want people to have lower cost healthcare, right, the people on the left, like, that's one of the things, like, especially the poor and the middle class, the number one tax in the middle class is health insurance. It just is, right? And so it's like, hey, how do we help those people you know, reduce their costs. Like, I think the folks from the left can also be, you know, on board with this too. And they're no fans of health insurance plans either. You know, the folks on the left. And so I think this could be one of those where it's, you know, left and right. Let's get together here and do something special. I hope we can have a good bipartisan crew, as a part of crowd health. So,
yeah, well, you have like a free market. We're all in this together solution, which we're all in this together, or can be if you're willing to pay.
Sure.
For one of your community members' bills, appeals to the left as well. Yeah. This has been a fascinating conversation, Andy. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thanks for having me.
I can't wait to become a member.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to have you let us know. You know, my parting shot here is, you know, I've kind of mentioned the beginning of this. I went over to healthcare.gov to get my plan. And, you know, ultimately what healthcare.gov is becoming is an expansion of Medicaid, you know, in this, it was America's Cares Act or whatever, that big pandemic act, trillion
cares, multi, act.
Cares Act, whatever. Yeah.
They're very good at naming these.
They are.
It's going to sound good. Sounds good.
The Affordable Care Act, and premiums are up 400% since that was done. It's becoming an expansion of Medicaid. So, you know, they took, you know, now 300 to 500% of poverty level is now fully covered under healthcare.gov. And so they're actually trying to, I think, use healthcare.gov to expand Medicaid, right? So what I'm trying to say here is, if you like government expansion, then keep going to healthcare.gov. If you don't like government expansion, don't be on healthcare.gov. Try something different, whether it's crowd health or whatever. You know, you are ultimately supporting government intervention in our healthcare by going on healthcare.gov. And so I'm asking people to reconsider that, and you can drop off anytime that you want. So consider us, but there's some other options out there too, but don't do healthcare.gov.
Say no to the government expansion.
Say no to healthcare.gov.
Yes.
I'm going to use that.
We can find CrowdHealth at joincrowdhealth.com, correct?
Joincrowdhealth.com. If you're interested in the Bitcoin version, it's crowdhealthbtc.com. It'll take you to kind of a landing page. We'd love for you to show interest in that. Twitter, Schoonover Andy is my Twitter handle. Join Crowd Health is ours. Follow us. We have some pretty pointed commentary on healthcare if you're at all interested. And we're starting to dive into the Bitcoin stuff as well on our Twitter page. And then Instagram is Join Crowd Health as well.
Well, is there a future you see where this Bitcoin pilot community goes so well that you just implement it across the board?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's totally our people. You know, our people are libertarian leaning. I don't want to say that in terms of like a political, you know, party or anything, but it is a group of people who are like, screw the government getting involved. I want to do something on my own. I'm cool being a part of a community. And I think the fact that you will only be within the kind of Bitcoiners, you know, funding each other, I think is a cool component of that. And so it could be something that we just expand it, you know, to everybody. Every crowd will have, you know, a Bitcoin component to it, because it makes so much sense. Like, why have that money sitting out there in fiat? It doesn't make a ton of sense. I just got to get more people comfortable with that.
I mean, you can argue you have like a fiduciary responsibility as the service provider to like protect.
At least give them the option.
Yeah.
Right. Like, have our Bitcoin community be like, hey, this is the way it's going to work. And then the other crowd being like, hey, you can put it in fiat if you want, but let's give you the option of doing it with Bitcoin. Yeah. Right. Like, I think that's the first step. And then hopefully get more and more people interested in that. Yeah. So it'll be great.
All right. Well, I can't wait to see it explode. August 1st.
Support. August 1st is where we're targeting. If we have 1,000 people, we're going to roll. So we're integrating with our partners right now. It's, like I said, it's a Bitcoin only platform that we're integrating with. We'll tell the name here shortly. It's one that everybody knows. So we're excited to make that public here shortly.
Boss freaks. crowdhealthbtc.com.
You got it.
Go check it out. We should, if we're not at 1,000 signups after this episode, I'm actually very disappointed in you freak. So
it's no commitment. Just go put your email address. I'm not asking for your, you know, your personal detailed information. It's just your email address and how many people in your family would be interested. Once we get to 1,000, I'll email you. If you're interested, great. If not, that's fine too. But we need 1,000 to get rolling.
If we're not there by the end of this week, we're going to post this episode. This is live, streaming live. We might be there already. You could go check your email, Andy. You could be like, oh, we're 1,000. But if we're not there by the end of the week, I'm going to be very disappointed in you freaks. So I know this is an international podcast and a lot of you are listening abroad, but American freaks.
Let's do it. I'll look at my email right after this to see how many we have signed up. Anybody who goes to crowdhealthbtc.com, we talk a little bit about leverage. Like originally we wanted to do it all in Bitcoin and then use leverage so that you could have that cash. We've changed it some feedback from some other folks that we're going to do 25% in fiat, 75% in bitcoins, just so you have some liquidity.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sell their Bitcoin. As Michael Saylor on, Bitcoin 22 stands up there and says, don't sell your Bitcoin. So we're trying not to have you sell your Bitcoin unless something crazy happens. So that's our attempt to not sell Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's good to have it.
Yeah.
If you need to sell, but try not to sell.
Exactly.
All right, Andy, thanks,
man. Appreciate it. This has been fun.
This has been great. We got to do it again soon. Maybe we'll do it in August when you launch.
I'll keep you posted.
All right. Peace and love, freaks.